Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello again, Lisa O'Sullivan, rally fan at your service on Spin the Rally Pod, alongside our senior staff writer at dirtfish.com, David Evans, the former motorsport team boss, George Donaldson, and the man they call the voice of rally, Colin Clark. Now, we are fast heading towards the flying finish of this 2021 WRC season. The World Rally Championship coming to a climax. And I have to say, after Finland was fantastically fast and Finnish fabulous and just brilliant, Spain has got a lot to live up to this year on the calendar. And it's all one surface.
Yeah, that's why I fear for it, Lisa.
What does that mean, Colin?
It's going to be fast, Lisa. It is going to be fast, isn't it, Colin?
Fast, but yeah, you know what? I don't know. There must be a very good reason why they've gone back to tarmac.
Maybe. Oh, forbidden. The FIA forbade mixed surfaces. But I presume that was under pressure from the teams. And I have to say, I bemoan the passing of those fabulous wet and slippery stages we used to do.
Aye. But, George, it made the rally. You know, let's face it.
It did.
Spain
it was a great
getting
event.
Boring. It was getting dull. It was getting predictable. You know, you basically have the top 10 set by stage 4, stage 5, and it stays that same way unless someone makes a silly mistake.
Unless it rains, Cole.
Here's one for you, though, Cole. That was when we had Sebastian Loeb in a Citroen.
Yes. Yes.
Will it still be the same? You know, he was against a couple of Finns in Fords and, you know, perhaps a Norwegian in a Subaru. But was there anybody apart from Danny Sordo who could really challenge Loeb
in Spain?
Danny was never actually really allowed to challenge him, was he? You remember, there was a couple of years, wasn't there, when he was leading and then he was told to slow down a bit.
I think that's an interesting point, David, and it's one we're going to have to watch. But I really do fear that taking that day of gravel out, which, as George says, you know, certainly more often than not, it seemed to be wet and slippery. And sometimes, remember that year, it was absolutely atrocious.
Oh, fantastic. On the opening day. It was just
drama and excitement. And if it wasn't wet and slippery, it was dusty as hell. And that gave us all sorts of issues. Yeah. I enjoyed it. There were great stages. That wonderful stage where I think it was about 30 Ks. It had 6 or 7 Ks of tarmac. It was a kind of U-shaped stage. And the tarmac went along the top of the U.
Up north, along the bottom end of that river and then back down south, wasn't it?
Gandesa sort of way. It was a fantastic stage. What we always got in Spain on the Friday, whether it was dry or whether it was wet, was we got drama. We got something to talk about, something to get excited about, and then something to take into the rest of the weekend. Your fingers crossed, as you say, we'll get competition.
Then tell us, Colt, who is going to dominate in the same way that Sebastian Loeb...
But before we move on to that, can we just finish talking about what actually is... what the stage is... we will have, because obviously we've lost the gravel stages. What's coming in and what might be a happy replacement?
Couple of new stages, some classic older ones run in reverse direction in quite a few cases from my look at the map. I think Colin's sadly correct, but the weather's looking pretty solid. Pretty solid. It's not too warm,
it
24 degrees
again,
maximum.
Oh, his teeth were gritted there, weren't they?
Not witted, yeah.
But here's the thing, George. You know, there's plenty of stages. There's plenty of wonderful tarmac stages.
And, yeah, great. You know, it's going to be good.
Tarmac rallying is fantastic. And as David and I experienced at the weekend in Mull, it is, you know, super, super exciting. But you drive around some of the tarmac stages in Spain and, you know, some of them are as close to circuit racing as we are going to get. smooth, beautiful, flowing roads. Okay, they're up in the mountains, but they're nice and they're wide and
gorgeous,
they're flowing
area, and beautiful area too. It's lovely.
A beautiful area, beautiful to drive in your road car, and probably beautiful to drive in a rally car. But for me, not quite giving enough. Not quite giving enough to you have that element of jeopardy, that element of risk and reward. You know, they're all pretty much the same. But we'll see.
I'm playing devil's advocate here a little bit, because I do, as you and I discussed quite a lot last week, Carl, I do agree with what you're saying largely. But tell me, you know, who is the new Sebastian Loeb? Who is going to make 3 days in Spain quite dull?
No, well, nobody.
Know, you know,
potentially Thierry Neuville, if he can get his car set up right.
George, you take your Thierry Neuville, and I'll raise you an Elvin Evans.
Yeah, well, I'll then throw in a Seb Ogier.
Yeah. And you're absolutely
and I'll trump you all with an Oit Tanak on form.
Yeah, No.
We're just going through the list of entries.
I wouldn't be putting money on any one of them.
Correct. The point, Lisa, is that David is correct, you know.
Yay.
Last time we went through a period of predictability with the 3 days of tarmac in Spain, you know, the man that we all knew was going to win before the rally started was Sebastian Loeb. I have no idea who's going to win this event. Really, it could be one from how many drivers, guys? Four, at least four, maybe five drivers. And that might be enough. Because what we have to remember is there's very little cutting. So road position, you know what? In some ways, maybe first on the road isn't the best place to be. You've got no braking line markers, anything like that. Maybe second, third is the best place to be, because there'll be very, very little pollution on the road. So it gives everyone more or less an equal chance.
Do you not think it pulls those wee stones on the road, Colin? You get those little gravelly stones, it gets pretty slippery, marbly.
A little bit. But not massively.
Undoubtedly, it is a little bit processional to go back to a 3-day rally with a service at lunchtime in the same place. But I think to balance that on this event, undoubtedly, the circumstance will do that, won't it? You know, we've got an incredible opportunity here for Sebastian Ogier to clinch an 8th World Championship. He's been very, very vocal about his intentions to go out and win the rally. I just must say, by the way, I got very, very confused last week when we were talking, sitting on the dock of the bay waiting to go over to Lovely Mull. And you were saying, Col, about how I think I hadn't appreciated that we were talking exactly about Ogier winning the championship in Spain. And you were saying he has to be ahead of Elvin. And I was saying, no, he doesn't. Yeah. I was talking about him keeping his championship alive to go to the final round. Of course he has to. And just to be very clear, he needs 6 points. He needs to take 6 points more away. He needs to finish Spain with 6 points more.
David, this is a fine rear guard action, but I'm sorry, we all know you're a bit stupid now.
George, I'm just explaining briefly George, I'm explaining what he's got to do this week. Last week's gone. Forget it. Move on.
Okay.
Ogier has to depart Spain with 6 points over Elvin Evans. Do that, and he's champion. And there's no... Yeah. That would still mean that Elvin could finish the season on the same points, because, of course, he'd then be 30 points. He's now 24 points behind.
Can I count that?
It goes on... Hang on a sec, George. It goes on count back, because, obviously, Ogier would have won more. He'd have won 5-2, or if Elvin wins Monza, 5-3. So he's champion. Carry on, George.
But he is running under a suspended penalty. Yeah,
so?
Isn't he? So he's got a suspended penalty for driving away from a police event. Did he not get a suspended sentence for that?
Yeah, but he's not going to do that again, is he?
No, but he might not. But if he does something else, this is the FIA stewards that we're talking about here. We've already talked about how ill-defined, how ill-defined all the penalties are. There is no reason why Sebastian could be champion-elect after Catalunya Rally.
Yes.
Didn't we have a helmet-related penalty?
Yeah, we did. Go to Italy. Commit some other extraneous little event, and someone says, "I'm sorry, Mr. Ogier, we're docking you 10 points for that."
What?
Do you think? Yeah, you're dead right.
Why not? They could do whatever they want.
It had a time penalty in Finland, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
He did,
which was worth nothing. Tell me, someone's not smarting about that.
You're absolutely right, George. But I think, you know, if we know one thing about Sébastien Ogier, we know that he's a deeply intelligent person who will fully understand. And behind him, he's got Julien Ingrassia, and he's got Jarmo Leitanen, he's got Kai Lindstrom. All of these people, you know, will keep him on the straight and narrow if he needs to be. Maybe the bigger question is whether or not he can remember to continually do his crash helmet tucks. Quite a bizarre one that has.
That's bizarre, David. You and I talked about it at the time when we had those, I think it was three incidents in Monte Carlo of drivers not doing that, drivers and co-drivers. We thought, is it a coincidence? And it turns out perhaps it was a coincidence. But, you know, I spoke to Carlos Del Barrio. He was one of those co-drivers who didn't do his helmet up. And he said, you know, I've been a co-driver for best part of 40 years and it's only ever happened to me once before. And he knew exactly why it happened on that occasion, exactly why. So, you know, for it to happen to him again and then two others more or less in the same stage, to me it smacked of way more than a coincidence. And then for it to happen to Ogier again, but I did wonder whether something had changed, but the helmet makers tell us nothing's particularly changed with the helmet. I'm not saying anything sinister, But to me, there was maybe something more to that. But it does appear it was coincidental, you know.
The checklists, Colin, that the drivers have and the co-drivers will have the same thing within those cars. Those cars are like fighter jets. You don't jump into them, hit the key and away you go. You've got to have it warmed up in the right order. You've got to array everything correctly. You've got to check everything very carefully and make sure certain things are on, certain things are off. There's checklist after checklist and... you know, you just need one, you know, maybe the driver turns and says, or someone comes on the radio or a last minute message, say, can you check this? Just as he's going through his set procedure, he does that. Something else pops up. Marshall comes back and says, oh, we're delaying your start by a minute. And all of a sudden your helmet's not done up. So, I mean, I think it's purely down to
George, those things happen a lot. Those things, everything you've just said there happens an awful lot in a driver and co-driver's career. But as I say, Del Barrio... only previously, once in 40 years, had all of those extraneous kind of measures contributed to the fact that he forgot to do his helmet up. Once in 40 years. Yeah. I found it all a little bit odd.
Well, the cars are getting more and more complex and they just come off for Christmas break. Yeah, I don't know.
Are you saying that it's not a coincidence then, Col? I was only half listening.
Yeah, I'm saying there's something.
I agree with you. Something's happened there that's put that extra factor into it.
Yeah, maybe it's you know, with these things, when you're doing something up under your chin, you can't see what you're doing. It becomes second nature. Has something changed fractionally? Even the shape of the loop. That maybe the
there hasn't been any changes. We went through this with
not
Stilo,
a single
didn't
change.
We? No, absolutely not. The fastening procedure hasn't changed.
And same I think materials.
You need to be more specific when you're talking about fastening things under your chin, Col, because some of us have more than one chin, you know. I think we should move on now. It is going to be a hugely exciting event. You know, I've been writing some stuff this morning.
Really good stuff, David.
Genuinely, really, from stage one, Ogier wants to win the rally. No. You know, there's absolute... He's going to be risking it, isn't he? If he's pushing, if the rain comes in. Has anybody seen a weather forecast?
Yes, it's perfect.
It's clear, yeah.
Perfect, oh, really? David.
God, it's going to be a dull rally Spain, isn't it? Oh, no. Really? Yeah. Not a very, hint of rain.
Back to the beginning
not
again.
Really,
not lovely, lovely
it's
temperatures.
Not, it's maybe it's a wee bit warmer on Friday. It gets up to... It's warm today, cooler tomorrow, cooler on Thursday, wee bit warmer on Friday. Doesn't really look warm enough to create thunderstorms. There's very little air movement. That can help build up a thunderstorm. So there's maybe a possibility of something, but it's going to be light.
I was just watching the weather forecast and we've got high pressures that are moving over the UK and we're kind of sandwiched between two of them, which means we're going to have a little bit of a cold passage of weather over the next. But Spain, the high sitting right over it. So no, toasty nice. Yeah.
So even and there's not even any really early morning stages where you might risk a soft tire,
or a mist, a little bit of mist.
It's down to 9 degrees overnight, 9, 12, 12,
where
9,
is that,
10,
George?
11. That's just in Salou I've looked at. So, wow. I mean, I could go to Flicks, for instance. That's
will we have a fog? Could that trigger some mist?
Go to Gandesa, George. That's
sorry,
up in the hills.
Which one?
That's the good Gandesa, good 400-500 metres higher, 600 metres
okay,
higher.
Okay, let's have a look at that.
Are we grasping at straws here?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes, we are, Lise. Yes, we are.
But regardless, yes, you know, it's they're really fast roads, aren't they? So it's going to be a quick race, and there's lots of people that, you know, have got a not a point to prove, but they've got an absolutely strong shout for a win there. Everybody we just said, all three of the factory Toyotas, all three of the factory Hyundais. Wouldn't it be fabulous to see Danny Sordo winning at home?
And he's got a chance, David. He has to have a chance, doesn't he?
Well, you know, the only question mark, Cole, would be the co-driver.
Is he going to be hamstrung by team orders?
Of course.
They're not going to hamstring him with those, are they?
Two things. You're right, Lise. No, two things. Team orders are possible. Highly unlikely at this point in the season. There will be no team orders. There will be no team orders. Because none of the drivers can win the championship.
Okay, that's good.
But yeah, the co-driver situation could be a tricky one for, obviously, for Danny.
Can you explain why?
What, because he's changed it again?
Because he's on his 15th co-driver of the season.
Yeah, can we go into that into a little bit more depth? Why?
Well, Carlos Del Barrio at the start of the year, or they decided to go their separate ways.
No, I think Lise means why specifically in Spain, Cole?
Well, just because it's only their second rally together. Is it the second or third, David?
Second
together, isn't it?
I think second
rally together.
Unless you've done any European championship? Maybe so.
Well, they did the MRF tires thing in Portugal at the weekend, didn't they, last weekend? To be fair to Danny, and he always goes well in FAF, in the FAF area. Always, always, always. He was going
stay on the line, call up.
Well. He was going exceptionally well there. So, yeah, they've done a few events together, but at least it's their home event. It's Spain. It's the Spanish crew, David. What are you
they're
doing?
They're positively embedded together now. They've done 1, 2, 3, 4. This will be their fifth event together.
Who's this?
Is that right? Danny Sordo.
Danny Sordo and Candido Carrera. That's a great Spanish name, isn't it?
It's a great name, but I'm not familiar with him, so I don't know what he's like.
But you know what? There's pressure on Carrera, isn't there? You know,
there is. Is this a tricky one, though, George or Colin? Is this, or Lisa, in fact, sorry, to step into Spain? You know, Spain to me has always seemed, from a co-driver's perspective, a reasonably straightforward event. You know, there's not a huge number of junctions. If we've got dry weather, we're not going to have a massive influx of additional notes from the gravel crews. What do you reckon?
I think you might be right, David. It might be a more straightforward event. Certainly, you know, physically, you know, that you're not going to be dealing with muddy shoes and crap coming into the car. Yeah, a nice, clean, dry event. It's got to be easier. It's got to be more pleasant to do. Yeah, you could go rally in your dinner jacket. You know,
did you just say, George, mud issues or muddy shoes?
No, muddy shoes. Muddy shoes. You know, like
muddy
bringing
shoes.
Mud in
right.
the car and, you know, you're,
right, sorry.
You're trying to keep the car a bit clean and tidy and stop your, you know, when you tuck your pace books back into your bag that you miss and it goes down and it gets wet and muddy. It's an extra physical factor to deal with. None of that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think you're right. I think it is probably one of the easier, cleaner events to do.
And it is, you know, it's a reasonably consistent level of grip, isn't it? In the wet or the dry, you know, it's not quite as abrasive as someone like Corsica, but you know, you kind of know what you're going to get with the grip there, don't you?
But I think
Sordo could go well.
Yeah, I think that, and also the comments you've I think everyone's made except me is that I think absolutely it could be any one of seven or eight drivers just be fighting for the lead, and that would just be, wouldn't that be an amazing way to finish up with the World Rally Car in a pure tarmac event that's going to be clean and dry, to see all the drivers fighting evenly with gaps, you know, the same or less than we saw at the front of Finland for the first 2 days. That would just be amazing.
It's possible.
All
really
days.
Possible, George.
It is
really
possible.
We'll have small gaps.
It is.
Clean event, so, yeah.
And, it, you know, you've got these people like Elvin and Thierry who I think both of them would admit to a preference perhaps for tarmac and just real racers, and Sordo thrown in there. There is, I honestly think there is plenty to get excited about apart from
do you know what, David? But this also helps in some ways. This helps with Elvin Evans's efforts to win the title this year, because what Evans needs is he needs to win, or he needs to be first or second. But more importantly, he needs to put drivers between himself and Sebastian Ogier. Now, there are some events where you would say, well, he'll be lucky to get one driver between himself and Ogier. Mm. But on this one, you could foreseeably see, is that the right way to put it? It is foreseeable that. It is foreseeable that Evans could win.
I'm glad it's not just me today, Carl. Four...
Sorry, mate. I'm still suffering with jet lag from Mull. but you could see him getting three or four drivers between himself and Ogier. If Ogier doesn't have the best run, which is possible, Evans and all the others we've talked about have a good run, it could happen. So, you know, it's not all over by any stretch for Elvin Evans. It's a good opportunity, potentially, if the others play ball and come to the party and, you know, produce their A game. How is that for a whole load of, what do we call those things? I just talked in... What's the phrase, David Wordsmith Evans? They were They were all, you know, when people say things are obvious. Oh, don't worry about it. I'll remember what I'm trying to say in a minute.
But you do wonder. It is very interesting, Cole. unlike your last sentence, which wasn't very interesting.
No.
But also, you do wonder, don't you, if, you know, all of this talk from Sebastian Ogier about going out to win the rally, great to be back at the races, put all of this BS in Finland behind him and just get on with it. Is he just revving the rest of the boys up, particularly Elvin? Because Elvin knows, as we identified last week, if he wants to keep his championship alive, he has to finish ahead of him. So if you can see this guy saying, "Oh, I'm on for a biggie, I'm gonna go at it, hammer and tongs, I'm going to win this one," you've only got one response to that, and that's to go even harder, isn't it? And
force a mistake.
Yeah, exactly, George. Exactly. Yeah. And this, you know, we've seen this sort of psychology from Ogier before. But equally, we have seen, you know, one of the weirdest, absolutely strangest incidents in the history of probably Sebastian Ogier's career was in 2015, wasn't it? When he was somewhere ahead going into the power stage and then he crashed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Approach to the roundabout.
Handed Mikkelsen his first win.
Yeah.
That was very odd.
It was absolutely bonkers, wasn't it?
The suggestion was he was trying to prove a point and he'd apparently had a conversation with someone about how much his winning margin could be in the power stage. He was that confident. Okay. He could win by... Because remember he won the Mexico power stage a few years ago by about 8 or 9 seconds.
Yeah.
It was a second a kilometre quicker than anyone else, and everyone went, that's impossible. Mm. Supposedly, there was a similar conversation about what he could do in that power stage. And rather than just cruising to victory, which he could have done, he absolutely went for it and got caught out by that Armco, didn't he?
He's not going to do that again.
He's not.
Discount everything I've just said.
That said, David, I mean, for me, I think, you know, like you're both saying, I'm quite sure that Sebastian is not just talking bullish. I'm sure he is quite determined to go out there and get a great result.
Yeah.
And it would be you'd be hard pressed to say that he's not going to manage it, but the risk always is a mechanical malady or just a little mistake. Yeah. You know, just a little mistake, whatever, because he does want to push to that limit. And I think for Sebastian, it'll either be, you know, a top three or nothing. From his body language
Elvin's
right
the
now.
One that's perhaps everything is very, very straightforward for, isn't it? You know, he just has to go and win the rally. There is, you know, nothing...
Gloves off.
...is more straightforward. Yeah. Totally. But perhaps, I mean, if we look... Sorry, Cole.
You know, no, here's what I think is going to be really interesting. I think you're right about the Elvin and Ogier dynamic. You know, it's one to watch, and I think Ogier is very much, you know, using his acquired mind games ability. Over the years, he's been very, very good at it. But I think more than that, I want to see Hyundai. You know, Hyundai for me is an interesting one. Remember, was the last Tarmac event, was it Croatia?
Yeah.
It was, wasn't it, David?
Yeah, yeah.
Last full Tarmac. And remember,
No. Ypres, you plonker.
Wasn't it?
Ypres,
of course. Sorry. Apologies. But yeah, and we saw Nouville. But what... Remember, there were a lot of questions asked back in Croatia. And there was quite a bit of analysis done as to how Nouville drives the car. How does Nouville get so much out of that Hyundai and Tanak struggles so much? And someone told me to go and look at the power stage from, I think it was Croatia. It was either Croatia or I think it was Croatia.
I remember you saying that to us, Colin.
You went back and looked, George, the number of times, and remember that car was developed by effectively Thierry Nouville. Mm-hmm. The number of times that Nouville used his handbrake was massive, massive. Yes, something exactly. Like 25, 30 times. And Tanak only used his 4 or 5 times. So Neuville understands the car better. That could perhaps be...
But should you be using the handbrake that much?
No, I mean, normally not. I mean, normally, absolutely, categorically not. But maybe the way that transmission was, maybe the way the car was set up, you needed to unsettle it like that. I don't know. It does seem counterintuitive to me, Colin, yeah.
He was using it in relatively innocuous corners at times, just to get the car around the corner. But for me, that'll be interesting, because if Tanak's got to grips with that, we know how quick he is on tarmac. And then we really do have a proper battle. And I think Ypres probably showed that he does. He was quick in Ypres, wasn't he, on tarmac? So,
literally all the drivers have nothing to lose except Sebastian Ogier, and he's the one that's got the most bullish public line. I'm going to go out and win this event. Thanks very much. I'm putting this to bed now. I've had enough of it. Thanks. I'll just show you who the boss is, and then I'm retiring. The event after next. Thanks very much, guys.
I can't remember, but it has been a few years since Ogier won in Spain. He certainly hasn't won. Of course, we missed 2020. Because Spain was never ever going to be in the calendar that year, despite whatever happened with COVID. But then, so you go back to 19 and Thierry won. And of course, that was completely overshadowed by Tanak winning the championship as well. But Ogier hasn't won Spain in the current generation car. He hasn't.
You know, so, I remember it's always been first on the road for Ogier. That will have penalised him.
Yeah,
massively
on the gravel.
So unless the years it was wet, but
absolutely. But even in the wet years, George,
I think you're right, Colin,
on the road, you're cleaning the puddles out. You're the one that's aquaplaning. So.
Aye, and because quite often we've come to stages that are wet, but they dry very quickly.
But as well, don't forget this year. You know, very sorry not to have Pierre-Louis Loubet with us, but we do have.
Neil Solins.
Exactly. How exciting is that?
Very funny.
Sorry, massive brain fade briefly there. But yeah, Neil Solins.
I'm having it all the time, David.
Is a proper talent. And you know, we're overdue one of these stories with a super quick local youngster jumping in and doing what Mark Higgins used to do on the RAC rally. Exciting.
It is. And Solins has been around for a little while now, hasn't he?
Yeah.
He was junior champion a few years ago, wasn't
he? Yep.
And he had a bit of a run in R5 cars. And yeah, you know, he's always had his best results on tarmac. He knows these stages really, really well. I've always liked him. I've always thought he's got something about him. He's never quite had the breaks. You know, he could do something. He could do an Oliver Solberg in Sweden, for example.
Yeah, he could.
Or he might struggle but he might also find that he's a Pontus Tiedemann who just could not get the car to work, didn't trust the aero, didn't find any confidence with his car, and really struggled. And you know, where will he find his place, Neil Solins? Is it going to be an Oliver Solberg, or is it going to be a bit of a Pontus Tiedemann?
It's impossible to say, isn't it? Because you know, he's got no pedigree. He could, like you say, it could go either way. But don't forget, you know, you've just said it there, Cole. There is Oliver Solberg in a world card of both in these 2C. Competition high-end eyes. So it's great to see.
Competizione.
That's Italian, they're French.
But that's how it's, is it? Oh, yeah. That's how it's spelled.
It's okay.
That's how it's spelled, right?
No, it's just got an acute
really
accent. good Lord. Equally, we haven't really talked about M-Sport and Adrian Formo and Gus Greensmith, of course. But, you know, Formo is a guy who definitely knows how to drive on tarmac.
For sure.
But I did just want to very briefly mention, slightly further down the field, in terms of WRC 2 and 3, because I think Mads Osberg has to win to keep his championship alive in WRC 2.
Right.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
I don't. Hang on a sec. I'm just literally rifling through various websites
rifle
to give
away
you an update.
WRC.com today, and there's no calendar in it anymore. Go figure.
So Osberg is 6 points, 8 points. God, I'm rubbish at maths. 8 points behind Andreas Mikkelsen, and he has done 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 events. Mikkelsen has done 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So they've both done 6. So this will be Osberg's final event. And then Andreas, if he needs to, can come out and do Monza. So yeah, Mads needs a big, big result.
And do you know it's possible, David? Mads Osberg, remember there were times when he was driving a World Rally car where he would step back to the S2000 car back in those days.
Yeah.
For the tarmac.
Yeah,
event. I remember one Germany.
Yeah, that's right. To the S2000. Into that orange car, wasn't it?
Absolutely. He was never enormously comfortable, certainly not in a world car on tarmac. Mm. I think he's a better driver on tarmac now than probably he's ever been. And it's possible, but, you know, it's not the event you want to come to if you have to win, really, is it? You know, there are some really quick tarmac drivers in that category. Who you would say would probably be favourites before Mads. But what Mads is, he is an absolute, as we've seen all year, he's a fighter and a battler. And, you know, he has to have that car coming in perfect condition. And that's not always been the case, this year. He needs to have a bit of luck with the reliability of the car. He needs to make those tyres work for him. And that car hasn't really worked particularly well this year on the Pirelli tyres for whatever reason.
No, you're right, and you're up against guys like Eric Kamerle and people, you know, genuinely very, very quick tarmac drivers.
Quick drivers.
The other interesting aspect of WRC2 is, of course, Teemu Suninen starting his first event with Hyundai, which will be very interesting to see how he goes. Two Finns, Huttunen and Suninen. Who's going to be the quicker?
Well, soon. Just on experience alone with the car, you'd have to say Huttunen, but Suninen's a great driver. I mean, he's travelled at the very close to the front of WRC top level for short periods of time. So yeah, capable of an incredible pace, but obviously lost his way a little bit. Acknowledges that, getting on with it. Yeah, I think showing versatility, jumping into that car, making it fly, great opportunity for him.
I do think, we've talked about this a lot, the three of us, the four of us, sorry, Lisa. And Suninen is a lovely guy and a genuinely quick driver. But sometimes he is pretty ill-advised. And you look at that story on Dirtfish this week where he talks about his time at M Sport and the lack of testing. At times earlier this year, I was really surprised when he would stand there and say, I've not had any testing, I've not had this, I've not had that. It's difficult because his inability to see that bigger picture potentially has cost him his opportunity in a rally.
That's harsh. That's really harsh. Cole, David.
But equally, there were some, there were some good performances. There were some terrible performances. But he sometimes just, I think, needs to perhaps further engage the brain, or he doesn't. From our side, it's great because we love it when drivers say these kind of things. But all year, this year, M Sport's process and M Sport's way of working has had one aim. That is to get to next year with the best possible package, budget, everything that they can. Yeah. This year has been totally sacrificed.
Totally. But the problem is that is absolutely correct. And that is, for most of us, crystal clear. But the problem was that Suninen, particularly in the first part of the season, was almost expected to go out and compete, almost expected to go out and try and win stages and potentially win rallies, or certainly put in the best possible performance. And what he failed to do, I think, was perhaps verbalise exactly how his preparation was not ideal. And we don't.
I'm not really having that, Colin. He is an entirely coherent Finn. He knows exactly what he's saying.
Yeah, yeah, he does. And he thinks about what he says. He's very thoughtful about what he says. But I think it's harsh. There was expectation on him, David, to deliver, and he couldn't deliver because he didn't have the right preparation. There's no question about that.
But how much prep did he have going into Monty?
I don't know. Did he have any?
I can't remember. That was a difficult question.
I love the fact we're asking questions. We don't know the answers to.
I can't remember. I mean, he wouldn't have had such an extensive test as anybody else.
Look, let's be honest with the Monte test anyway. The chances of getting it right, you've got a 10% chance of doing a Monte Carlo test that's going to yield you a perfect result that gives you a car that you can drive. Monte Carlo's down to understanding it before you go.
But my big thing point there was, hang on a sec, Cole. My big point there was, after 12 miles, he was 4.5 seconds quicker than Sebastian Ogier in that first stage. Mm. That pace demonstrated to me that when we kicked off this season, the Fiesta was absolutely still. It still had the performance. And I still... Okay, it's lagged. It's definitely lagged. But, you know, they got the new engine and that picked up the performance. What would happen if you took Sebastian Elvin or Tanak and put them back in that car?
Well, that, So Monte Carlo, if I remember correctly, Monte Carlo was Sunin's first go on those tyres, on those Pirelli tyres. Is that not correct?
Yeah, it probably was anybody's first go, wasn't it? Literally, he didn't test.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. Literally his first time
Very
on.
Well remembered, Colin.
Yeah. Sometimes I surprise myself. I really
You'd have been quicker when you were a tiny bit younger.
Yeah. When I was a lot younger, Lise. I'm slowing down a touch, but only a touch. Don't you worry about it. No, I'm not making excuses for him because I think that there have been mistakes from his point of view and on his part. But, you know, but I feel as if, you know, maybe we're a bit hard on him at times. And
Stop being soppy.
I am soppy because I like the kid. I like him. I made him cry in Estonia, which made me feel really bad for about 5 minutes.
You did. I do remember that. You were quite down.
You know, and I like him. I like him. I think he's got massive talent, and I just think that he's lost. He's a little bit lost, or he has been. But what I like is that he is beginning to rebuild things. There's clearly confidence issues there. They are being rebuilt, and potentially
we've Colin, seen that was one result.
Yeah, well, it's the start, David. For goodness sake, if you do one rally, that's your start. You can only win the one rally you've done. You know, if he now builds on that, then yeah, great. But that's what he has to do. And we've seen it with the great drivers. We saw Elvin Evans taking a step back to the British Rally Championship. We saw Tanak taking more or less a year, 18 months away from rallying. You know, some of the very great drivers in rallying have had to do that. Step back to come forward. Whether he is at the same level those two were at, I don't know. Whether he'll get the opportunity to come back, I doubt it. But he's doing what he has to do. And you know, as I say, I just feel a bit guilty because you're right, I'm a soppy bugger.
And you were very mean to him in Estonia as well.
I was, but only because sometimes I have to channel my inner David Evans.
How did
Evans
I miss this? How did you make him cry? Did you beat him up or something?
No,
no. He just asked him particularly searching questions.
I ask questions for a broadcast, a TV broadcast, and they can be quite top line, they can be quite general, and the interviews can be quite short. Now, if you ever see David Evans in action, he is probing the whole time, and they go on and on and on until he gets an answer that he feels happy with. So sometimes he coaches me and he says, Cole, you've got to probe more. You've got to be a little bit more. So I do that. And I did that with Timo.
Way too far.
I took it too far. And I said something along the lines of, I said something along the lines of, that's it for you. Your career's over now. Only because David Evans told me to. And honestly, the tears welled up and he couldn't speak and he turned and he walked away.
Yeah,
it was awful, David.
But it was a fair question because, you know, he'd been through a really tricky patch. Let's turn it around a bit. You know, the guy did a stellar job in Finland, and he has a massive opportunity in Spain. Let's see what he can do.
100%.
Moving very just quickly into WRC3. I'm just looking down. Johan Rossell. 1, 2, 3, 4. I think
he's been good.
Six events in WRC3, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah, so he's finished. He's done. So 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, so Kaito is 15 points behind.
Oh, he's running out of fingers and toes here.
I am. He is, 15 points behind. So Kaito needs a win. Kaitanovic needs a win in Spain in WRC3. But it is, once again, it's a splendid field.
Chris Ingram's back,
isn't
he?
Pepe Lopez and Chris Ingram. And our absolute favourite, Colin Clark, who were we talking about in Mull last week that is going to Spain? Please don't let me down. We saw the name on the number plate.
I'm not going to let you down, David. I'm not going to let you down, David. Just say something else.
Playing for time. Totally playing for time.
The number plate.
Yes. Neil Simpson. Neil Simpson. Our friend Neil Simpson's going.
Exactly. Neil Simpson and Mike Gibson.
Pressure.
Two of the nicest people in rallying. And they... I would say they're probably not going to win WRC3, but they need to be shooting for a podium. that would be a proper result for.
Oh, come on. Neil's going for fun. Neil's going for fun. He was a magnificent driver in his day, but he does it for fun these days.
He does.
Don't put pressure on the poor boy.
But it's going to be a great event. And obviously it is also the end of juniors. It's mad, isn't it? How is it the end of the season? How is it the end of the junior season?
But, fair play, guys. I think we have to say, can we just say, it's something in my last kitchen table, well, the one before Mull. We have to pay a bit of respect and take our hats off to certain people at the promoter who have managed to keep a full season. You know, to get, 12 rounds in this season, and all right, not everyone likes Monza, and I'll wait and see. I enjoyed Monza last year, but only because it snowed and it rained like hell. But you know what? To get 12 rounds in this year, there'd be no absolute curveballs thrown at them. They've dealt with it, and they've done a great job. And we have to applaud them, I think, for that, David and George and Lisa.
Totally. We do. Totally. No, I mean, I bemoan Monza in one way, but only because it was boring to watch. I'm sure it would, if I'd been there, it would have been brilliant, Colin. It just didn't come across well in the footage.
I agreed with you. It was, once you'd seen it, and we've talked about this before, there are some events which are way, way more exciting to be at in person than they are to watch on telly. You know, if they get the balance right, go up into the hills a bit more. But Monza would have been dull as ditch last year if we'd not had the weather. And I fear that could be the issue this year. If we don't
Lappi's inspired tire choice of mud tires on the on the tarmac. Exactly. I mean, how brilliant was that? Or snow tires, sorry, used the snow tires on the asphalt and just about took the lead. I loved it.
Well, he would have done. If the loop had been completed, George, if they'd run that stage where it was snowing, Lappi would have been saying, thank you very much.
Once again, the weather playing a massive part in these events, you know.
Yeah.
Now, David, can I say something else as well? Team has moved on from Spain.
Can we just very quickly jump into JWRC just to remind everybody that Sammy Pahari leads juniors by 3 points from Britain's John Armstrong with Martin Sesks on, what's 91 take away 77? Is that 24?
14.
Is it really?
I'm just saying,
14. Sorry.
Don't ever doubt Colin on arithmetic.
His mental arithmetic is very good.
It's his thing. No, it's way better than thing. It's just gobsmackingly good.
Sometimes.
I like him working out average speeds. Yeah, it's quite good on the fly. When you used to do that in your day, Colin, you were good.
Yeah, I know. But I've forgotten the formula I used for that. I'm getting old. When I remember the formula, I'll be good again. Can I blow some hot air up David Evans's?
No, he was late.
No, I want you because I've read an article. Listen, I've read an article this morning that I enjoyed as much as any article I've read all year, David, that you wrote. I don't read all your articles.
Why? That's a disgrace.
That's shocking, actually, to admit to that.
We do need to get around to Extreme E's final round in Britain briefly.
Well, let's get to that in a second. But let me talk about the article you wrote. I think it was 6 things that we're not yet sure about for this season.
It was a
beautifully written and provocative article. I really enjoyed it. One of those articles that you just didn't want to end. You thought, I hope there's 10 points he's making and it finished at 6, sadly.
Thank you very much, Colin. It kind of scares
I'd recommend anyone.
I have no idea. 6 somethings. But it kind of
6 unanswered
me.
Questions in the WRC driver market.
That
sounds about right. It scares me that you talk about it being provocative because I didn't think it was provocative.
Not provocative. Wrong word. Sorry, thought provoking.
Stick to the arithmetic, Colin.
Yeah. No, it was good. You know, last week was just bonkers, wasn't it? You know, there was just so much.
It's tremendous.
And to come off the back of Finland. And to go into a week like that and then to go straight into Spain and then not much of a drop-off till Monza, it's a fantastic run-in. And even more exciting, we've got, you know, through November and December, we are going to have these awesome Rally 1 cars, and they will be awesome. You know, in terms of technology, it's so exciting to see such a big step for WRC. And this isn't me, you know, it's not just hyperbole at all. It is really exciting. They're going to start Monte testing. You know, November, December, how cool is that, that this thing is real now? We will be able to actually see genuine progress and where these cars are. We'll see them in their sort of almost final form. When you get these big regulation changes, the one that we had at the end of 16, it was sensational. We talked about it again at the weekend, Colt. Remember when Ogier went and tested that Toyota? And people didn't actually believe it was Sebastian Ogier in the car driving it because the car looked so bad. And, you know, it just brings so much news, so much excitement. So it is going to be a phenomenal end to the year for us. It really is, particularly if this championship fight goes down to the wire, which it probably won't.
No, I think it will. I think it will. I think
it's a rally, guys. We all know it could happen, and it could fizzle and effectively be sorted out in Spain. And fabulous, you know, what a great way for Sebastian Ogier to pretty well end his professional, top level career. Mm. Although he's going to continue by dominating a championship and finishing it one event ahead on a nice clean rally where he can stand up on top of the car. Yeah, I think he's such a worthy guy, such a great, you know, promoter of our sport, an intelligent, clever man that's going to go on and presumably do quite well in other motorsports that he seems to be quite focused on. I think he'll do really well. The one thing that none of them speculate, and I've not seen anything written about, how can he take the pay cut? You know,
George,
unless you've got the top of Formula One, all those drivers driving those sports cars in Le Mans, you know, the very best of them will be maybe getting paid a couple of €100,000 a year for that event.
I suspect his is a Toyota, an all-encompassing Toyota deal.
Forget the money.
Well, absolutely.
This is a ridiculous conversation. He's earned his money. And
he
knew his earning potential was as World Rally Champion. By all accounts, he's been the best paid rally driver we have had by some margin.
Yeah, and his lifetime earnings will be better than anyone else, 100% sure.
More than Loeb, David. More than Loeb from what?
Really? That might be contentious. Loeb had a fair bit longer, but
and Citroën and Red Bull, through the good times.
But he had Volkswagen. Volkswagen and Red Bull.
Oh yeah, that's true. I forgot about that.
But the thing is, Ogier is at the point in his career now where he does what he wants to do. He does the fun things, and the fun things. He doesn't do the fun things because they're paying him. He does the fun things because he wants to. And yeah, he wants to be rewarded for the effort and the risks that he takes. I'm sure of that. But he does what he wants to do. If he wants to do Dakar, he'll go and do Dakar.
It's the challenge, isn't it?
It's and the challenge, it, George. Yeah. Absolutely.
The interest,
you know that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're just being a bit...
I was being a bit David and just throwing it in, not necessarily my thoughts, but you know, exactly. There it is. The other thing I did think about, cross my mind, when he didn't do his helmet up again, I thought, you know, has the guy actually lost interest? Is he starting to switch off already? Is that him out of it? You know,
we're not going back to the helmet.
No, just saying that, you know, well.
No, yeah. Guys, you know better than any of us, George, guys like Sebastian Ogier never lose it.
No, they never do. They are so focused. There's only one way, and that's it. 100%.
Even in 50 years when he's playing Tiddlywinks, he will be taking a strategic approach to the game of dominoes or Tiddlywinks or whatever he's playing with his great-grandchildren or whatever. And
I didn't
still
know you
could
play those games strategically. I'm going to have to go and revisit them.
Dominoes, George. Dominoes is a great game of strategy.
Oh, I love dominoes. Yeah, dominoes.
Great game of strategy.
Yeah,
but what do we think? And perhaps now we do need to do a little bit more research. The news today that Extreme E will finish in on the south coast of Britain.
I'm confused.
Yeah, I was
Military
confused.
Land. Yeah, it's on
enough when suddenly we weren't going to. You know, it's totally understandable why we're not going to South America. Get that. We were supposed to go to Brazil and to Argentina, to Patagonia. Cole, you and I are absolutely gutted not to be going to Patagonia. I'm sure we all
totally
are, actually.
Yeah. We're going to Bovington, though, maybe.
And so Brazil and Patagonia are replaced with Sardinia and Bovington. I get it. It's all about promoting climate change, that aspect I understand, but I thought the big point of Extreme was to take the world into the area to demonstrate the problem.
Yes,
absolutely.
Can we really do have to give them a little bit of leniency, because COVID and the pandemic has completely scuppered all the plans.
I'm sorry,
Lisa.
There are other places.
I'm not sure.
There are more climatically challenged places that are open to go to.
To be honest with you, totally, David.
And well, I mean, I like the but I do like the argument that they've used is so they have been going to all the different parts to highlight the desert, the ocean, the Arctic, the island, and all of that. But that's not where people are chewing up the environment. So you can flip it by saying the people that are doing the damage are not in those places. Yes, we have seen how you can have leave it as you find it event in the ocean, in the Arctic, in Greenland. But it's the cars that are being driven here. It's the way that people are living in congested environments that are causing the damage elsewhere.
I get exactly what you're
saying. I can get that argument.
Right. All right. No, it's not. It's not an argument I get. It's not. That's what the EPRI stuff is all about. You know what this does is it leaves them open to be able to say, yeah, we're going to take this to the streets off Buenos Aires, and we're going to do a Buenos Aires circuit because that's where the environmental damage is happening. For me, they had a reasonable point of difference, and they had quite a clear message for setting this up. You know, what we've got to think about is that the motorsport market is a very crowded market, no question about that. The Extreme E came along with a very, very laudable mission statement, and they have compromised that mission statement on a number of occasions.
Yeah,
and I find that very, very confusing. I buy in to these electric buggies tearing up the sand dunes where turtles are laying their eggs potentially. That's another matter. In parts of Senegal, in parts of wherever. I buy into that. I think there is reason for doing that. You know, I personally would rather they said curtail the season. If we don't have something that fits in with our stated aims and objectives, do we compromise to the point where the whole thing starts to look a bit dodgy? Or do we say, no, we're sticking to our values? Because the sport supposedly is all about values. It's all about values. But all
can
of a sudden,
can I add to that as well? You talk about compromises and some dodgy decisions as well. I was a little annoyed, to be honest, to see that Jamie Chadwick was unable to compete in the Arctic Rally because it clashed with the W Series. Now, the whole point about Extreme E as well was about trying to bring through women drivers on a parity. Yeah. Exactly, inclusivity and representation, which is a key word that you see women standing side by side with their teammates and competing equally for success, and you have a championship where you're trying to bring through women drivers solely, and you can't compete because somebody's scheduled it for the same time.
Yeah. Nonsense. Yeah. Absolute nonsense. I agree, Lisa.
It was, but I do think they've shot themselves in the foot here. You know, I was fortunate enough to be in Saudi, and the way that it did raise awareness of all of those issues was fantastic, and it did it by getting out there and actually showing you the plastic on the beach and all of that sort of stuff. I just don't understand this one.
What's with attaching the Jurassic moniker to
it? I know. They are clutching at straws there.
Totally. Really... And I understand, you and I, people who know the UK, know that Dorset coastline, I think it's Chesil Beach, not far away from there. It's not where we're actually racing, but it's not far away from there, is known as the Jurassic Coast because... there are an awful lot of dinosaur fossils around there that tend to wash up on the beach and become exposed year after year because of coastal erosion. Maybe that's the point. I don't know.
I think that's definitely...
But the Jurassic just adds a little bit of, I don't know. Exactly.
I think you're right that they should have just knocked it on the head. You know, it's almost bad enough that we're going to Sardinia in October, which I don't really, an island expiry, what does that mean? How does that have the same relevance?
Are the island sinking? Should we go to Vanuatu, which is sinking because of tides are rising?
Maldives disappearing.
Odd. You know, there's no doubt, they will put on a great race. And maybe that's enough, a great race off-road will be very exciting. We all know that Sardinia has some really, really rough places that will be a great place to host this event. And actually just putting the programming together and bringing the race together will be enough because it gives them the vehicle to get the message across again. But I've got to say, I don't think that's been done particularly well this year. I've watched quite a lot of it. I was in Saudi. I haven't been to any other races. So I've consumed it in the same way that everybody else has. And I don't feel that the message has been pushed particularly hard.
I think I'd agree with that. It hasn't caught fire in the way that it should have done.
No, it hasn't, Lise, for me. It hasn't. And
the Australian Outback did.
And it's a shame because, you know, all of the aspects...
Los Angeles.
The cars we've seen, the cars are still terribly compromised in terms of suspension and various other aspects. But they've got these amazing drivers. You know, the Carlos Sainz, Sebastian Lowe, Johan Christofferson, the Hansons. Yeah. What are they doing?
And the women drivers, David.
I am really...
Molly Taylor.
Yeah,
Jamie Chadwick.
Exactly. And all of that whole aspect just brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. But... for some reason, it just hasn't sparked in my eyes. I don't know why.
No, I agree. Next. I wanted it to.
I am actually noticing that you are not commenting. I suspect that you would fear lawsuits if you commented on this.
Yep.
Right. Let's move on.
That's a wrap.
Let's move on and have a Lisa. Your prediction: who's going to win Spain?
I'm going to say Thierry Neuville.
I'm terribly sorry to say wrong because it's going to be Alvin Evans, but okay. Georgie?
Yeah, he's got the most to win by going for it, so Elfin, but it'll be someone in a four-wheel drive car. It's very open.
Neil Simpson.
It's very open. No.
I'm going to give you a top four, David, because you know that Mystic Call was at his very best on Mull.
You need to explain that then in a moment. Don't. Give us your top four.
Top four is going to be Evans, Neuville, Sordo, Ogier. And the fight will go all the way to Monza with winnable margin.
You've given us something exciting to look forward to.
That's a great shout, Colin. That's a wish list. That's the sort of thing I do, Colin. But I loved it.
It's going to happen.
I loved it.
I've had a premonition.
Positive waves. Loving it.
I've had a premonition. It's going to happen.
Sorry, so you put Evans, Neuville, Sordo.
Yeah,
Ogier.
Ogier and then Tanak. Then right down.
Will Elvin take all five bonus points as well, Cole?
Yes.
Four
bonus points.
Four
bonus points.
So how many in a demonstration of brilliant maths now, how many bonus points is Ogier going to take, Cole?
None.
None, right. Mm-hmm. My brilliant maths has kind of fallen.
So you're predicting a mediocre event for Sebastian Ogier on his last full dry tarmac rally.
I am predicting a bit of bad luck for Ogier. You know, luck is the most difficult thing when you make any predictions about rallying, is to factor in luck, bad luck.
I think
the most difficult thing.
He'll target a win. He'll accept a 6-point advantage. A 6-point plus advantage going into that last event. And I think that's what he'll target. And I think he'll either do that or he won't finish. Because I think he's capable of doing it. I think he can pull it all out the bag. So that would be my only prediction I'm prepared to make, is Sebastian Ogier will do what he needs to do. Mm-hmm. Or something will go wrong.
He is the sort of driver that doesn't like things to go down to... No driver likes a championship to go down.
No,
to
how
the,
many
to
championships has he won well in advance of the final events of the season? Most of them, surely.
Mm. Yeah.
No. He won last one on the last round. Remember, he went.
Yeah, but before that, the VW years, Colin, he'd won it.
Well,
by
the VW years,
end of the summer.
But he went to Australia, and remember, we all debated Spain before Australia. We debated whether he would drop points to not be first on the road in Australia. And he said, don't be silly, don't be stupid. You take every point you can when you can. And he went on first on the road in Australia to win that year in the final round. So he has done it before. It has gone to the final round, as we know.
But the point is, he doesn't like that, does he? You know, they all want to manage their position. And he will want to get this done.
The marketing team like to have all the appropriate
t-shirts and
merchandise. Yeah.
But here is the thing as well, guys. There is, and this is very real. This is very, very real. There is this added uncertainty of COVID. You know, they've all been double vaxxed.
This is
brilliant
theory from Cole.
Both.
I had this most of the way up the M6 last week.
Yeah.
It's great.
Do you know what? We had 9 hours to talk on the way back on Sunday from Mull.
Wow.
And I think we talked nonsense for 9 hours, David. There weren't too many gaps. Mate.
We did. But come on, Cole.
I almost want to know the most stupid thing you spoke about, but maybe not.
What is happening in the UK, and I assume through the rest of Europe, his school kids are going back to school, and as David knows, bringing COVID into the households and a
weaponized
lot of households.
Yep.
So, you know, we know that Elvin's got two young kids. We know that Seb's got a young child. You know, I would almost be saying between this event and Monza, you isolate. Isolate up because it is a real risk that any of the drivers in the WRC could pick up COVID between now and the final round, and then their season is blown, certainly the two at the top.
And it's not on medical grounds, Cole, because they're athletes and they'll be double vaccinated and all of that, and they'd get over it. But it is the simple fact that a positive test, PCR, means you cannot travel. So regardless of whether they're asymptomatic or whatever, they're not going anywhere. And I think
the people in their group, of course,
if you remember last year, what was the penultimate round last year? Was it Sardinia?
Yeah.
Sardinia. Remember, Elvin was booked on an EasyJet flight back from Sardinia.
Yeah.
And Toyota changed all of his travel plans last minute. They put him on a private jet to come home because they didn't want him sitting on it. Nothing against EasyJet, because all the airlines are still filling their aircraft, as they have always done. But you know, they didn't want... I'll tell you what it was. It was Turkey. Turkey, I think, he got the private jet home rather than taking... Oh!
That's
David's
not
telephone.
Me.
Isn't it?
Sorry,
not
it
me.
Is me, guys. It is me, so, guys. I'm going to love you and leave you, and I'm going to answer this phone, okay?
Well,
George,
Andrew,
you all the best.
Cheers, guys.
George.
Bye.
See you, mate.
I think that's something that needs to be considered.
That's a very good point, and I still think we're clutching at straws, but that is Spain. That is Spain. That's how far we are in the calendar, Spain.
I am desperately trying to think of that really interesting question that you just asked, Lisa, about what was the most stupid thing that we talked about on the way down the road.
I'm just trying to find how low was the low when one of you said, have you ever wondered, or what is the worst?
No,
and obviously, remember,
we
don't have an X rating for this podcast.
No, there was lots of tosh and nonsense talked, genuinely.
The worst. But just before we go, I think it is worth just reflecting. Actually, we weren't talking nonsense, because we were inspired by the fabulously lovely Land Rover Defender 90 that we'd borrowed from Land Rover to go up there, which was an epic vehicle. And it was a great event, wasn't it, Cole?
You were giddy.
We were car giddy. But if people haven't been to Mull, you need to go walk to the nearest mirror, look at yourselves in the mirror and ask yourself what's going
on.
Yeah, have a word with yourself, because it is actually, no, we should say it's rubbish. It's a terrible event.
Don't go.
It's the most appalling part of the world. Please don't go, because accommodation is already booked for the next 10 years. You can't get a ferry for weeks. But it was magical again, wasn't it, Cole?
It was absolutely magical. We had a great time, and you and I enjoyed every minute of it, David. And you're quite right. We spent
an inordinate
amount of time in the Land Rover Defender 90.
Did you take turns in driving?
Yeah. Well, we were supposed to. We were supposed to, Lisa.
He was asleep most of the time.
It was a great car. And what astonished me about it, I actually started driving in a Defender 90. One of my first jobs, the car that we used was a Defender 90, and that was 33 years ago. Quite different, this one, I'll tell you. I remember in the old one, going down the M6 just after Junction 9, there's a downhill section, and I went downhill there, wind behind, and got 83 miles an hour out of it. 83 miles, and I was absolutely ecstatic back in 1988. Well, this thing could hit 83 miles an hour in probably about 8 seconds. It was just astonishingly fast. It made the most amazing noise. And I loved every minute every minute of the 7 or 8 minutes that David let me drive for.
You were just
how
grumpy.
How long before you'd worked out exactly how to adjust your seat into the right sleeping position with the heated seat and
lumbar
support?
Let me tell you, Lisa, what I didn't work out, and David worked out very quickly. And so he takes great joy, and he cackles like a witch whenever he gets away with it. You know, in putting the heated seats on for me. When we're in places like, I don't know, Saudi Arabia, and it's 40 degrees, and he puts the heated seats on, and then laughs like a manic person. What he discovered this time was that the Land Rover had cooled seats, and it blew cold air up your backside.
Oh,
and what annoyed the hell out of me was every time he would just fall about laughing, and I couldn't work out how to turn it off. And I still don't know how to turn it off.
So he'd get an extra
minute or two of pleasure, and then he'd turn it off.
Lisa, in answer to the question, that was the most stupid thing. And that debate did go on for 3 days.
Well, they've kept you entertained, David, then that's what you
did.
Need.
It certainly did.
Hopefully we've kept you entertained. This has been the Rally Pod. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening and enduring this amount of talking by the team. If you want to get in touch, at Dirtfish Rally on Twitter is a really good way to get in touch. Bring us your questions and your comments, and take those into account. And if you want to subscribe, just click the subscribe button on your podcast supplier, and the next edition will be dropped in as soon as we've recorded it. And the next one, pretty much can guarantee, possibly, maybe, unless we get a special breaking news version, will be the review of the Rally de Catalunya. And I'm quite irked that I'm not going to be in Salou. I haven't been there for ages, but I do like it. Still never been around the theme park, PortAventura. Quite fancy doing that one weekend as well. But
Ferrari World now as well.
Ferrari. Well, no, I saw them building that, and that's just the weirdest looking roller coaster. I mean, if anything says, whatever. thank you, guys.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thanks, Lisa.
Very much.